If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam Podcast here on Inside the Ropes, episode number 44. My name is Kenny McIntosh, but I am of course just the crusty bread next to the full soup that we all love and enjoy known as Finn Martin. Hi Finn.
Hello Kenny, how are you this week?
I'm good, it's Friday. But then you and I are probably the same way in that, you know how like people are like, oh it's Friday, it's the end of the week, and we're like, but we've never worked a normal schedule anyway, so Friday can be Tuesday for all we care.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, one time, I think I did get that Friday feeling one time in my life, and it was quite exciting. And then I think I must have finished the magazine on a Friday or something. I actually had the Saturday off. And like the next week I was in work on the Saturday and like, ugh. So yeah, that's self-employment for you. No picnic.
But then you do get to, if you want to, stay up for pay-per-views. So
well, you do.
Every
actually, self-employment is one of the greatest things in the world when it's going well. And when it's not going well, it's like, oh dear.
Mm-hmm.
No one's got any sympathy for you at all. Like, you chose to be self-employed. You're your own boss. That's what they tell you, isn't it, Kenny?
I know. Because the thing is, it's like, sometimes you've got the motivation and sometimes you don't. I mean, it's funny because sometimes, you know, we'll record a podcast and then, like, so, not usually with our one, because ours is kind of, you know, later on in the week and it goes up and that's fine. But if we're doing the one where, you know, David and I do the Raw Rundown or Son and I with SmackDown Summary, it's like, you know, we always aim to get them up the next night if we can. And sometimes I'll do it at like midnight, my time, because David's in America. And then you're going, well, I'm going to be up till 2:30 now editing because people want to have it by the time they get up on Wednesday to go to work. And you want to make... And the thing is, I've not really got any fucking excuse not to do it because this is what I do.
Exactly. So, yeah, so stop complaining.
Stop complaining. First of all, I want to give a shout out to one of our patrons over on Patreon. His name is John. I'm going to butcher his fucking name. John Mook. Oh, sorry. Let me get the name up again. I don't want to get it wrong. It is John McKercher. Anyway, John McKercher. John. And he asked this brilliant question back in December. And I kept meaning to get around to it. And the question is about Bob Backlund in his initial WWF title reign in 79-82. And so I'll say about it just now, but it's a really great question. And Finn and I talked about it before we came on air. And we decided that it would be best for us to both go away and research this more. And have a little section next week where we talk about it and discuss it and see what we think.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, was it... Was it 78-83's reign? I believe it was. And
yes.
Then that was... That's right. And then he was, of course, interrupted by Antonio Inoki in Japan in that reign that they don't acknowledge, but did happen. But yeah, we'll definitely cover that next week. Yeah, really looking forward to answering that one, Kenny.
Yeah, and speaking of Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes. And there's a multitude of levels of content you can get. You can go the $7 level where you get everything, including NXT reviews, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, all the Power Slam stuff. But you could also do the $4 level, which is the Power Slam level, which basically means that you get this podcast 24 hours early. You also get a Power Slam overrun every week. And you also get exclusive articles written by the one and only our God and Saviour, Finn Martin. And... Finn, you did the first set of articles a couple of weeks ago where you did a wrestling roundup and you did an article on people you felt would be deserving of getting into the WWE Hall of Fame, like we said last week. Sadly, we didn't have enough space for your Hillbilly Jim entry.
That's right, yeah, it had to be cut, you know, due to space constraints.
Space constraints, it's like the mixed tag at WrestleMania 29. But then Michael Farrer, one of our listeners, Michael Farrer from Australia, who, you know, very patron pledge and all that kind of stuff. He called you out on Twitter, Finn.
I was called out.
Who the fuck does he think he is? So he said that he really enjoyed the article, but he would like to see some more female representation. And in response to that, you're going to be writing a little bit about that this weekend.
I certainly am, yes. He wanted to see some female representation in there. Not a little more, but some, because I didn't include any female contenders, which was a fair point. So I will be putting forth a short list of female candidates who I believe deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, that's one thing I'm going to be writing. And I explained to you before we went on the air, all some of the other pieces that are going to be in this week's articles. Yeah, I've done something on Shane and Kevin Owens, some on Laurel Van Ness, the Sami Callihan and Eddie Edwards incident, some on Braun Strowman, which I think people will find very amusing, some on little thing on Randy Orton, something on the New Japan anniversary show. So plenty of stuff there. And also some as well on the situation this week with the Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal. Something on that as well, which I think people will enjoy.
So, I mean, if you hiring Finn Martin to do articles is kind of like saying, can you get me a burger from McDonald's? And then they just turn up with like three steaks at your door. And you go, okay, great. So there's tons of content coming up this weekend that you can expect from Finn. But Finn, speaking of the WWE Hall of Fame, Kid Rock this week was announced as the newest celebrity inductee into the Hall of Fame. And it has caused controversy because a lot of fans do not want him to be in there for his political views, or they think his songs are rubbish. So I've got two questions for you about it. One of my questions is not going to be, are his songs rubbish? But do you care? Does it bother you? Is this the hill to die on about Kid Rock being in the celebrity wing?
Well, I mean, he's... I understand the frustration. I understand the annoyance. And, I mean, there seems to be like more of an outpouring of anger about this for the celebrity wing, you know, clues in the title, celebrity wing, than there was for the announcement the week before that Hillbilly Jim was going in. So as far as I'm concerned, Kid Rock is more, well, you know, I wouldn't say he's more of a worthy candidate for the Hall of Fame than Hillbilly Jim, because I don't think either is. And you could say that Hillbilly Jim at least was a wrestler. If they had included on the Hillbilly Jim thing that he'd been like worked in PR and worked for the company for many years after he retired, you know, in his Hall of Fame video, it would have been easier, you know, it would have been more palatable to me. But they didn't mention that, which I found a bit odd. Because, you know, he's been like a friend of the company for years and he's done all sorts of stuff for WWE post-retirement. I mean, to me, he's been a bigger deal for the company in retirement than he was when he was a wrestler. So it baffled me that that was not mentioned in his Hall of Fame video. I mean, the Kid Rock thing, it's like, you know, you could say, well, it's a celebrity wing, so does it really matter who goes in? And you can think, well, there's quite a few celebrities that should have gone in before Kid Rock, when you think about it.
Well, I do want to ask you one thing, because I don't know if you know anything about this, but it's the main question that people have, or the one of the main criticisms that people have got, and I think it is valid. So the big criticism seems to be, okay, it's your celebrity wing. There's one name from the history of WWE and celebrities that's not in there. It's kind of a glaring omission that they're not in there. Can you think of who that is?
Cyndi Lauper.
Exactly, Cyndi Lauper. Now, do you know, have they ever tried to get her? Do you think that she's maybe turned it down? Because it seems like a no-brainer. Like, she's a big star. I mean, three years ago, she wrote a Broadway musical and stuff. Like, she still, you know, releases albums and things. It just seems strange to me that they would never have tried to get her.
Yeah, I mean, I find it odd that she was not approached about it while Captain Lou was still with us. Because, you know, he could have inducted her, and they had mentioned some weeks back they remained close and she genuinely liked Captain Lou.
Didn't she come out on Raw in 2012 with Wendy Richter when they were with Heath Slater and Piper or something like that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then Piper as well. I mean, I think Piper died, was it 2015? I think Piper passed away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when Piper was around as well, that would have worked. And so I'm really quite kind of perplexed as to why it's never happened, because if she didn't want to have any association with the company, she would not have made that appearance, would she?
Yeah, I mean, it just strikes me that I would have thought, I mean, she's a big name.
Maybe
they've reached out to her and she wanted more money than they wanted to give her. I don't know. But
It is definitely bizarre that she hasn't gone in before Kid Rock. But there again, if you look at the Hall of Fame, it's bizarre that, you know, all the people that I mentioned in that column, such as Ivan Koloff and Vader, did not go in before Hillbilly Jim. So, I mean, the whole thing, if you really put too much stock in the Hall of Fame, it can be a tremendous source of annoyance and frustration for you. You've got to really let it go, you know, but you've got to just see this as this sort of entertainment, part of the entertainment, just part of the work. And like some years they'll put people in there that absolutely are deserving, and that's a really nice moment. And then usually that same year that they put someone really deserving in, they put someone in who's really undeserving as well. But it's kind of something you just got to tolerate. I mean, the Kid Rock thing, I'm not really a fan of Kid Rock. And, the way they were talking about him in the Hall of Fame video, it was as if he single Undertaker's American Badass character over, wasn't it, with the song? As if it was Kid Rock who made the Undertaker such a star. You know, none have done so with quite the oomph of Kid Rock was like one of the lines that they used in the video this week. And that video just seemed to go on and on. It just never seemed to end. So, you know, I'm with people in a sense that, why is this guy going in before her or him? But I mean, you know, it's the celebrity wing. Does it really matter? You know, I don't think it really matters that much. I don't think it does, Kenny. You know, if you're going to get mad about anything, get mad about Hillbilly Jim going in.
Poor Hillbilly Jim and your vendetta. Okay, well, here's a question. Who's more deserving to be in the WWE Hall of Fame, Hillbilly Jim or Coco Beware?
Well, I would say, I mean, Coco Beware had a better career because he had a good run in Memphis before he went to work for Vince, and I think Coco Beware was a better in-ring performer. You know, he did that movie did the, was the Ghostbuster, wasn't it? That was a hell of a move, and he was in, was it High Energy with Owen Hart? Was it High Energy?
Yeah, High Energy with Owen Hart.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good little sort of opening match tag team. I mean, he wasn't a bad performer. I think he was a much better performer than Hillbilly Jim. But I mean, he's not Hall of Fame worthy either. You know, if you want to really look at it as a serious project, you know, why is this guy in there? He was just a low card guy in WWF. You know, he had more success in Memphis. So I guess strictly speaking, from a wrestling standpoint, Coco Beware deserves to be in there, should be in there before Hillbilly Jim, and of course was inducted before Hillbilly Jim. So I would say Coco. What would you say, Kenny?
It's like choosing between being pissed on and shat on, isn't it?
I mean, Hillbilly Jim was just foul as a wrestler. He was just rubbish. He was garbage. You know, and Coco Beware at least could, you know, he could put guys over. And I mean, to me, Hillbilly Jim was just an embarrassment as a performer. Coco was not bad. You know, he was obviously not a big star, but I didn't think he was a bad performer at all.
He also did some numbers for Piledriver, the album.
Of course.
So
who could forget that?
It always frustrated me that when Coco Beware went in the hall. I mean, do you know what's funny? Because I actually think Coco Beware was the first guy that when they went in the Hall of Fame, they were like, oh, so this Hall of Fame is a joke. Coco Beware's in. And he was inducted by the guy that probably should have been in at that point, which was the Honky Tonk Man. Because people forget, like, even though the Honky Tonk Man was a jokey character, like, he headlined shows for over a year as the Intercontinental Champion and drew.
Oh, Honky Tonk Man was, you know, in the Power Slam Interviews Volume 2, I did a huge interview with Honky Tonk Man, one of my best interviews ever. And Honky and I talked about why he wasn't in the Hall of Fame. And he has been offered it, he's been approached it, and he turned it down. That guy, a lot of people didn't really grasp what Honky was doing back in the, you know, at 87, 88, 89, at his peak in WWF. That guy was a hell of a performer. in terms of generating heat. He was not meant to be a serious wrestler. He was like a heat machine. And in that cartoon environment, he was perfect for the, you know, the IC title level. You know, a lot of people say he was a lousy performer. And I get that because his matches were quite, they weren't, you know, they weren't like super stiff matches. You know, it wasn't like Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat or Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage. It was a totally different style. So I get why people didn't really rate him as a performer. But in terms of doing his job as an Intercontinental Champion, he was very effective in that role. He knew what he was there to do and he did it very well.
And you know, the first two videos, I always talk about it, the first two videos that my mum ever got me of WWF, first two shows I ever watched, were WrestleMania 3 and SummerSlam 89. And obviously Hogan was one of the main reasons I was, oh my God, this is great. But one of my fondest memories, early memories of watching wrestling, is when I watched SummerSlam 89, there was something about seeing this Elvis impersonator guy with a little man with a big megaphone against a huge man in polka dots who had a lisp and in Dusty Rhodes. And when Dusty Rhodes and Honky Tonk Man have that match at SummerSlam 89, the finish to the match, if anybody remembers, is that Honky Tonk Man holds Dusty Rhodes for Jimmy Hart to smash the guitar over Dusty's head. And then Dusty ducks and hits the Honky Tonk Man instead, bionic elbow 1-2-3. But one of the glory parts of it is at the end, Sean Mooney catches a word with Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart in the aisle. And Honky Tonk Man is pretending like he's Elvis because he's been so knocked out. And he's like, I need to speak to Priscilla. And he's just like full Elvis. And it was just like, even as a kid, I was just like, this is great. Like I was mesmerized by him and that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, he was absolutely a tremendous performer. Not so much for what he did in the ring, but all the other stuff, you know, all the other things. And yeah, just little stuff like the fact that you can remember that now, Kenny. Is just like, that says it all, doesn't it? The fact that you can remember that all these years later. And probably something that happened on this week's Raw, if you were question, or maybe Raw from 2 weeks ago, if we were to talk about Raw from 2 weeks ago, it would be quite difficult to remember what happened on Raw 2 weeks ago when you think about it. But you can remember that from an event that took place back in 89, you know, nearly 29 years ago. So, yeah.
Now, also, you are going to be covering in your articles for Patreon the Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal thing.
Yes.
So I'm not going to step on your toes of what you're going to talk about. But basically, you know, the thing that everybody's figuring out is that Fabulous Moolah, there's been a lot of accusations about her, about the way that she treated the women that she trained and mentored. That's probably not the right word for what she did to them, but on Monday they announced Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal for WrestleMania. But I was talking to Sondra about this in the SmackDown summary, and I think it's one of the points about it that's a bone of contention is in WWE folklore, the Fabulous Moolah character is a legend. The character. Yes. And I think if you were just calling it the Memorial Battle Royal about the character, it wouldn't be that bad. But the problem was more that the video was championing Lillian Ellison as a woman who helped female empowerment.
Yes.
Which was too much for people to stomach, quite rightly so. So you're going to be writing all about what the accusations were against her back in the day, some examples and all that kind of stuff. But what happened yesterday, Thursday, was the WWE sent out a statement to various members of the media. I think it's pretty much to everybody, actually, about the Battle Royal, saying that they are no longer going to be calling it the Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal. It's now just going to be called the WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal.
Yes.
Which, you know, is because of the uproar. But the uproar from fans and stuff, because I remember there was actually an article on Forbes.com.
Yeah,
a couple of days ago, which doesn't usually happen because they're one of the kind of you know, we do things that WWE wants us to do kind of thing. So Snickers got involved because they're a big sponsor of WrestleMania. Apparently, they've had a word with WWE, basically saying, you know, we're not letting you do this.
Wasn't the word that they used unacceptable? The stuff that. They've been told about what Fabulous Moolah did. They just fight because they're all about quality and things like that, as everyone should be. And Snickers were basically made aware of Fabulous Moolah's past. And as a sponsor of WrestleMania, they were like, this is not on. This cannot happen. Basically, they were saying they didn't want to associate themselves with an event that would name a match after a person who did these things. And rightly so, Kenny. I mean, the stuff that, that Fabulous Moolah did or was accused of doing was just absolutely vile. Vile is the only word I can use to describe it. Yeah.
And do you think that with that, you know, because the thing is people are kind of using this term, you know, our voice worked and all this kind of stuff. And while technically, you know, it's not the WWE and all the fans are enraged, we're going to change things, but the fan reaction, I don't think Snickers would have maybe picked up on it had people not been as sort of vocal about it. So maybe in some sort of domino effect way, it is teaching you that having a voice and speaking up can actually make a difference.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, people have alerted Snickers to this information, which they were presumably unaware of. And yeah, it absolutely has made a difference. So everyone who complained about it, yes, your wish has been granted. You know, WWE has had to remove this person's name from that event, which is, you know, justice has been done. So rightly so, Kenny. Yeah, absolutely.
So WWE's announcement to the press was, after further consideration, we believe it's best to proceed with the name WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal. What remains most important is that this historic match is part of WWE's unwavering commitment to the women's division. Also, Deadspin had reached out to Snickers directly.
Okay.
To get a statement, and we got one from them. They said, we were recently made aware of the World Wrestling Entertainment's decision to honour a former wrestler during the upcoming WrestleMania 34 event. As a principle-based business that has long championed create an inclusive environment that encourage and empower everyone to reach their full potential, this is unacceptable. We are engaging with the WWE to express our disappointment.
Yes, I'm sure that was a huge part of the reason why the change was affected. It's the right thing. And regardless, I mean, WWE should never have named the event after in the first place. You know, a little bit of foresight, just thinking about it for more than a nanosecond, you're going to, people, once they actually saw this person who they described as amazing, a woman who empowered all the women, people were going to do searches for her. And that's when they unearthed all this information about her. And yeah, that triggered the, yeah, WWE should have thought this one through. It really should have done.
And you know, I actually feel for people like, it's even like Stephanie McMahon. I'm sure that to Stephanie and in the entire time she knew the Fabulous Moolah was great. And she was probably this like nice grandmother type figure, but you're never really going to understand what a person is really like by asking people in power what they're like, because they're the last people that are ever going to see it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd much rather ask the janitor or the receptionist what the person's like, because then you're going to get, everybody can be nice to who they need to be nice to.
Especially in the wrestling business.
Yeah, but like, are you nice to everybody? Are you nice to people who are either, you know, mopping up the floors or running the company? Are you the same with everybody? And so I feel like Stephanie's probably never seen it. I mean, I'm sure she's heard all the stuff, but so anyway, they've changed it, and you'll be doing more about that in your article, which is over at patreon.com/insidetheropes this weekend. Keep an eye out for that. Been quite a busy week in wrestling again, Finn, as always. So
absolutely, yes.
Let's kick it off with talking about on Monday. John Cena did a promo where he said that he was not going to have a match at WrestleMania. He was just going to be a fan. He went into the crowd and drank a guy's beer. And then he kind of changed course halfway through the promo and challenged The Undertaker for WrestleMania. He then went on to kind of chastise Taker a little bit, you know, saying, you know, get over yourself. When I lose matches, you know, I get back up and you're just, you know, walking away. Don't hide behind your lame excuses. You're not washed up and broken down. If you were, your wife wouldn't be posting videos of you on an Instagram page. So he kind of threw the gauntlet out to Undertaker. So I think you're a good barometer for whether this was good or bad, because you're not the biggest John Cena fan alive.
Am I really such a good barometer of whether or not this was good or bad, Kenny? I mean, everyone knows that I'm biased towards this guy. Sorry, not biased towards, biased against.
Biased against. But no, so what did you make of the way that they tried to veer into the Undertaker thing, the story they're trying to tell? Unpack it for us. What are they trying to tell? What version of the Undertaker do you think we're going to see? What do you make of the whole thing?
Well, I mean, what version of The Undertaker are we going to see? Well, with Kid Rock going into the Hall of Fame, maybe he'll play the Undertaker to the ring. He'll play American Badass. And Undertaker will come out on the motorbike. We sort of dismissed this as a possibility. Was it last week or the week before?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Maybe there's a connection there. Maybe at the end of WrestleMania, all these people complaining about Kid Rock will be punching the air with joy.
Would you like to take him returns
as the American Badass?
Now, would you like to see him return as the American Badass? Because, you know, he put the gloves and the hat down the ring last year. He came out of Raw 25 without the hat and the gloves.
Yes.
Do you think they should go full American Badass? Yeah, they should do a hybrid between Deadman and American Badass. What would you like to see?
I would like to see exactly like what you just said, some sort of hybrid of the two. I mean, I don't think he can come out as the character that he played at WrestleMania last year, because that would just undo the significance. In a sense, the significance of what he did at the end of the Reigns match has been undone anyway, because we know this match is happening now. Cena would not have said these words. He would, you know, the segment would not have been scripted in the way it was if this match were not going to happen. So we know the match is on. We've known that anyway, but this, to me, was confirmation on Monday that it's definitely going ahead. So I would like to see a different version of The Undertaker to the one we saw at WrestleMania last year. And then he's sort of honouring what he did at the end of the Reigns match. Would you agree with that, Kenny? Do you think that would work?
I think that he has to be different. My biggest fear for the whole thing is the last couple of years, whenever there's been an interesting Undertaker storyline, he then comes back and just does his greatest hits. And it's not really that exciting anymore. Whereas yes. I think if he did go back to being the American Badass, that's kind of... It's the Clint Eastwood thing, isn't it? It's the, you know, now you're the grizzled vet rather than trying to be the same guy you were 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, he needs to do something different. I mean, hopefully they're aware of that. Although after the Fabulous Moolah blunder on Raw this week, sometimes you do wonder about their awareness, you know. I mean, that tells us a lot about that company and just how cut off they are from the rest of the world. I mean, as far as the angle went... it started off to me as a bit of a cheese fest. You know, it was a bit of a Cena, you know, I mean, the whole Cena character to me is just, it just baffles me on so many levels. You know, it really does. You know, if you look at that, are we going to be talking about Fastlane a little bit later? Or can I just mention something about Cena from the Fastlane match now?
Yeah, just mention it now since we're talking about him.
Right, okay. Well, to me, the major flaw in the Fastlane main event was that Cena, this was apparently his last chance saloon, Fastlane six-way match. So Cena should have, the story of the match should have been Cena trying everything he could to win and growing increasingly frustrated as every single tactic he used failed or his attempts to earn a pinfall were thwarted by others. To me, that should have really been the story of that match. Cena should have been the central figure of it, and that should have been, since... Obviously, he was the star of it going in. He was the pushed entity, more than any other person in the match. And this was the whole story of the match, was Cena trying to win this so that he would find his road to WrestleMania. So there should have been more of a story in that match than there was. As it was, Cena really wasn't in the match that much. And the other people were really like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and AJ Styles and even Baron Corbin. I think the others did more than he did. But at the end of it, Cena was sat there in the ring. He was like upset. He was like, oh no, I haven't won. But to me, if you look at the content of that match, he didn't really try his hardest to win that match. He did his usual thing. He didn't do something different. And I felt like the story of the match should have been very different. If, for example, Shawn Michaels... I know I'm using him as an example again. I've used him as an example before. If he were in that match, that's exactly how he would have been booked. And he would have gone in there and done a completely different match to how he normally would, which would be all based on him trying to score pin after pin after pin after pin to win that match so he could get his road to WrestleMania, because he desperately wanted to have a match at WrestleMania. Cena, it was just another match to him. You know, it was a good match, but Cena really wasn't playing that role of last chance saloon, I've got to win. So when the show ended, he was there, looked disappointed. Comes out on Raw the next night, he's Cena, Mr. Smiley. You know, his motto should be, Cena's motto should, instead of you can't see me, Cena's motto should be, nothing matters to me apart from my house rules. You know, that should be his motto. Not you can't see me, nothing matters to me, apart from my house rules, you know.
Also, can I just quote John Cena on the Edge and Christian podcast? You know, for me, it's just all about the story.
But yeah, that should have been the story there, and that wasn't the story. Why didn't we get that story? Because I mean, I wasn't emotionally attached to Cena's title chase at Fastlane. I mean, and that wasn't not just because I'm not a fan of Cena, but just because I didn't really feel like he really deserved to be in that match in the first place. And then the match wasn't about that. We didn't really get that from him that, you know, he desperately had to win this match. And if he didn't, then his WrestleMania dream was over. So he comes out on Raw the next night. And he's all smiley. It's like, you know, everything as if he'd won the night before. And then he sort of worked that into his promo on The Undertaker. You know, instead of getting downbeat and disheartened, I come out here and I do my best. It's just like, so that match the previous evening might as well not have happened. Because you're in a good mood today, regardless of the result of the match the previous evening. So why were you even in it? So I just felt in the beginning it was a real cheese fest and going into the crowd and really just pandering to the audience like he does.
Sven, I've got to ask you a question.
Yes.
Just pause at this point. So, hypothetical situation. We are standing at the, as we probably will be later on this year, we'll probably be at the Raw tapings in Manchester in November, I assume. And we're standing there with our beer, and John Cena comes out and he says, I don't have a Journey to Survivor Series. I've tried everything. I even tried getting in the women's match, but they couldn't see me, and you know, all this stuff. And but he says he's going to go to Survivor Series and enjoy it with a fan. And then you and I got very good seats because somebody hooked us up. Right. And John Cena jumps the barricade, and he walks up to you, Finn. And he wants a sip of your beer as a sign that he's going to be endorsed by the fans to watch the Survivor Series. Can you just let us know how that would play out?
I don't know. At this moment in time, you probably expected me to say something funny or sarcastic. I don't really know how that would play out, Kenny.
My dream is that you just go, you're so, like, you know when somebody's got so much rage that they can't verbalise anything?
What would be quite funny, like a little subtle thing, would be if he came up to us and tried to take the beer off me, and if I just pulled the beer away from him, that would be pretty funny. Way, and then just smiled at him, and then did little the Cena like hand gesture in front of my face, right to Cena. That would be pretty funny.
That would be the best. I mean, I would probably be sinking into my chair as my press credentials leave me forever, but I'd thoroughly enjoy it.
Now that would be amusing, you know. That wouldn't be me being obnoxious and horrible. That would just be a fun response, and it would be interesting to see how Cena would respond to that.
There you go. The battle that we all want is still yet to happen. But yeah, anyway. So you, the first half of the promo is cheesy.
Yeah, I will not contribute to WrestleMania this year. You know, Cena said he was going to WrestleMania as a fan. He said that he might be sat next to you. I thought of you, Kenny, when he said that he might be sat next to the fan. He could have been sat next to you and drinking your beer.
Can you imagine
your Lion Brew?
Can you imagine 7 hours of John Cena's banter? Oh my God.
God.
Check out this new car that I've got. I don't care, John. I get the bus.
Well, you could start ripping him about his house rules, couldn't you? You start really having a go at him about that. And
asking him about the
STF and just say, you know, your STF, John, is that an FU to the wrestling world? You should have to put that on. Is it? Tell me. We need to know.
Does Andre have to be resurrected from the dead and tell you to stop doing it? Because you don't listen to Steve Austin. Anyway, I will cackle my face off if Cena does the STF to The Undertaker the way that he usually does.
Oh, yeah. Now, that would be quite something. I can't see Undertaker putting up with that. So Cena, after sucking up to the fans, saying he's going to buy a ticket, and then he did this big U-turn and challenged The Undertaker. So, I mean, I've got to say the fans, he'd set the fans up really well. You know, he set that up beautifully. I've got to give him credit for that. And the reaction he got when he challenged The Undertaker was enormous. So, I mean, you cannot fault the segment in that regard, because the purpose of this was to try and get a reaction from the audience, huge, huge pop, which they can replay endlessly in the recap videos for this match when it's finally announced. So he got the reaction that they were seeking. So you've got to say that the segment was a success from that standpoint. I found Cena's lines at the end to be a bit odd when he's saying, get over your own ego, stop hiding behind your excuses, as you just said, Kenny. And I think he called him a self-centered, conceited egomaniac, which, like, aren't those three things the same? But I just kind of felt that he laid that on a bit thick there, and I didn't really understand that. I felt there was another way he could have gone about trying to call The Undertaker out, and I thought those were the lines maybe to use face-to-face when The Undertaker finally comes out. Although it's possible some have suggested that The Undertaker won't answer the challenge until WrestleMania itself, and he may not even appear on Raw. I don't know whether that's going to happen. We'll have to wait and see. But I felt some of the Cena's language towards the end was didn't really fit the storyline. So I found that a bit incongruous, I believe is the word. It just didn't seem very fitting for the occasion. But I mean, fans loved it. Fans reacted to the to Cena's WrestleMania invitation to The Undertaker. So I think you've got to really say that the segment was a success. There was a lot of parts of it that I didn't really like. But that's me. You know, as I said, I am biased against this man. So everyone knows that. But I feel that, you know, they achieved what they set out to. That's my opinion of it, Kenny. What do you think? What did you think of it?
I thought it was a great promo. I thought that he, I'm with you on the, I mean, I didn't really think about it, but it's completely fair on the, you know, not really selling the Fastlane thing. But, you know, the thing is, the story of him not getting to WrestleMania, you can't get behind. There's just no way, because it's so unbelievable in the way that, so I've kind of put that to one side, just for my own sort of sanity. But I think within the story of what they're doing, he did a really good job of selling that story. And, you know, he's always trying to be man of the people and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, he has had a lot of fun over the years about turning heel and stuff. And, you know, he's happy to embrace the fans that want to boo him and things. But I thought in that second half of the promo, like, it's maybe the most interesting most interesting build-up to an Undertaker match at WrestleMania since maybe the end of an era with Triple H and Shawn, I think. Because the Punk one, there wasn't really a story. It was like, I stole your pal's urn, and he's dead, so you can't get it back. Yeah. WrestleMania 30 was a bit of a, you know, because nobody was excited about Brock and Undertaker. It just wasn't that exciting. The Bray Wyatt non-existent build. The Shane McMahon one made no sense because Vince basically said that Undertaker was his bitch, and then Undertaker proved that he was his bitch. And then WrestleMania last year was, it's my yard. No, I'm the big dog. Woof. You know, that was it. So the bar has been very low. But to me, what's so fascinating about it is that John Cena wants to get a match for The Undertaker, and The Undertaker apparently does not want to have a match. So instead, he's calling him out on the thing that everybody's saying about him. Is, oh, he's broken down. He can't do it anymore. And I think bringing that element into it is really interesting. And I think the way he delivered it and kind of, you know, compared it to what he's doing right now. You know, he's... Because actually, what he was saying to Taker was kind of backed up by when he came out to the show. He came out and he didn't let it, you know, get him down. He was kind of like, I tried my best, I didn't get there, that's it, you know? And whereas you lose one match and then that's you gone. You don't want to wrestle anymore. So I think the story was really good. I think it was a great promo from him. And like you say, I think that I know some people don't want to see John Cena Undertaker, and I get if you're not thrilled about it, but at the same time, I don't know how you can look at the reactions of the crowd the two times it's been brought up and not see that it's the biggest thing on any of those shows that's come up, and it's a dream match for a lot of people, and they want to see it. And, you know, there's a lot of people say, well, you know, it's not going to be a good match because John Cena doesn't really have good matches anymore, and Undertaker's too old and broken down. It's like, Rock and Hogan is a classic, and I guarantee they're going to do more than Rock and Hogan did.
Yeah, I would think so as well. I mean, it might not be, you know, an amazing match, but I'm hoping it's going to be a heck of a spectacle. That's what I mean, that's what Rock versus Hogan was at WrestleMania 18, wasn't it? More of a spectacle. I mean, same as Hogan as Hogan versus Andre at WrestleMania 3. I mean, you watch that and it was just like, this match is dire. But it's such an event and it'd been built up so well that it was, to this day, I think Finn still regards it as the biggest match in the history of his company. So I don't know whether it really matters if it isn't a really good match. As long as all that really matters for this match, Kenny, is that it's got the atmosphere. And if it's got the atmosphere, then they're sorted. You know, they're sorted. You know, the thing that I mentioned it before, the Undertaker-Lesnar match at WrestleMania 30, I didn't think was such a... I actually thought the match was pretty good. But it did not have that atmosphere because people did not believe Lesnar was going to win. I mean, I think it just got to the point where people are just like, right, that's it. It's too predictable. And then, of course, Lesnar won. It was like, and it's remembered just for the reaction of the audience to the end of the streak. That's what that match is remembered for, nothing else. But had that match had some serious crowd heat, it would have been received very differently. So the whole thing with this Undertaker Cena match, you know, the measure of success to me will be if it has that sort of dense main event atmosphere, you know, those huge sort of cheers and people really getting into this square off between these two titans of the ring. And if it's got the atmosphere, then to me it'll be a success. If it doesn't have an atmosphere, then yeah, they've got problems, Kenny.
So the biggest, I was talking to a lot of people on Twitter on Tuesday about it, and I did a couple of polls and stuff, and the majority of people seem to either want to see it or are open to seeing it, see if it's any good. But the biggest criticisms of the match going ahead is that, well, last year was a perfect way to end it for him with the hat and the gloves in the ring.
Yes.
Last year wasn't a very good match, so what can he really do better this time round? And what, there's worry that it's kind of shitting on the Undertaker character by having him come back and be less than he used to be able to be. So what do you make of those criticisms? And I guess ultimately, do you think if the decision was up to you, do they do this match or not?
Well, I mean, those are fair criticisms because Undertaker Reigns last year, the match lasted too long. Fans weren't really that into it. There was a lot of sloppiness. Undertaker really looked like he shouldn't have been in the ring. I think most people would agree with that. I don't think Reigns was the performer back then that he is now. I think if the match were to happen now, it would be a better match. I think Reigns is a better main event performer today than he was a year ago. But I mean, it was, and again, you know, you've got that Reigns because he's not over as a babyface. That's a big problem as well. So you just got a lot of forces that really contributed to the failure of that match. As far as it taking place now, I would like to see it in the middle of the show. No, I don't want it to go on last, just in case. I mean, I think we sort of surmise that it's going to be Lesnar Reigns on last. I would like to see this match go in the middle of the card when the crowd are still, you know, still got fire in the bellies. You know, they're still really into the show. I wouldn't, you know, I do pity the person or the people that have to follow Undertaker versus Cena, because if this goes on the middle of the show, it should get the requisite atmosphere that it needs in order for it to be a success. As you've told me, Kenny, the Undertaker has had hip replacement surgery. Yes. And he's in much better shape than he was a year ago. So the hope is that he can do a lot more than he could do a year ago when he really shouldn't have been in the ring. I think most people would agree with that. I'm sure the Undertaker would agree with that as well. So it's a tough one, isn't it? I do get the criticism, and I certainly do get the, you know, the significance of what happened after the match. It's just sort of ignoring that. It's not respecting the significance of what happened at the end of the Reigns match.
But wouldn't it be that if he was to just come back in the hat and the gloves and the dead man, then that's them shitting all over last year. But if he's going to come back as a different character and sort of saying, well, that part of me's gone, then he is honouring it, right?
Well, you can sort of justify it, can't you? It's more justifiable because he's playing a different character. I mean, the other thing maybe would be for him to shoot, you know, when he does his rebuttal to Cena, maybe they'll shoot a video and they'll have like a shot of the hat and the gloves there, and we'll just see him picking them up and then putting them back on. Maybe that's one way around it for WWE. I don't know how that would be received. But if he were to do that, as if, you know, symbolically, right, he's coming back, putting the hat and the gloves back on, then he's making, you know, doing that return match because Cena's called him out, because Cena's said, get over your ego, because Cena's said, pick yourself up, man, pick yourself up, dead man, you know, and come out and face me. Maybe that could be justification for him playing the character that he supposedly retired a year ago.
And this is also the first time they've ever, in the Undertaker storyline, like, they're basically calling out what people are actually saying about him. They're actually bringing it into the story, which, I mean, I'm petrified about how he's going to come back, because I think if he does come back in anything but a change, it'll be just the wrong decision.
I mean, what matters to me, Kenny, is if the match is good and people are into the match, all sins will be forgiven. It's that simple. No one will care about all this stuff. They'll say, oh, Undertaker came back better than ever. What a performance. You know, they had a hell of a match, stole the show. No one will be even talking about what happened in the Reigns match. They'll be saying, wow, that Reigns match was an aberration. You know, that was something that, you know, that was a one-off. Undertaker's back. He's got another three WrestleManias in him. That's what everyone will be saying if the match is a success. It's what it all hinges on. Is the match succeeding? But I don't know. I think what they should do is they should get the Undertaker on Raw, or at least get a video of the Undertaker on Raw before WrestleMania, and not leave it till the big show. And then they can gauge the reaction to whatever they do. And if they do something like have him don the hat and the gloves again, and that's getting a bad reaction, then they can change tack. They can say, right, okay, people didn't like that. We need to come up with something else where he undergoes a metamorphosis, you know, reverts to the American badass character, and he's there firing up the bike and he's putting the bandana on and that type of thing. So there's a lot of ways they can go with it, and they can correct the mistake before the mistake is really made. So I think they've got options here, Kenny. I actually believe this can work. I think it can work. I think it can be a spectacle. And I think it can be really big, this. So I'm absolutely for it. I don't know whether that is as a surprise to people. I think I have said it before that I was looking forward to this match and that I thought that it could be successful.
Well, yeah, because you also mentioned the fact that Cena can't really pull a lot of his own shtick with Undertaker. You know, he has to kind of...
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I've said it before that, my favourite ever Cena match is the match with Yamaga at Royal Rumble 2007. Some people think, oh, Cena's had loads of better matches than that. Well, I'm not going to get into that. I'm just going to say, well, that was my favourite Cena match, because he went into that. It was a serious match. He was selling like it mattered. You know, obviously he could bleed in the match, so that helped. But it was a real serious Cena performance. And Umaga wasn't going to put with anything from Cena. Cena wasn't the star he is now, so he wasn't pulling those stunts, and he certainly wasn't going to pull them with that guy. And that, to me, was a real amazing performance from Cena as a wrestler. To me, he actually came across as a pro wrestler who really took pride in his performance and took pride in his business in that match. It was a real credit to the business, that match. And I think a match with The Undertaker, I don't know whether it can be as good as that, but I think it can come close. And I think if it's got the atmosphere, it can be huge. It can be absolutely enormous piece of business for this company. And really, I think for Cena as well, I think it could be really good for him. And I think he can atone for a lot of his sins. He won't be able to atone for all of them, but at least for some of them, with a serious performance against The Undertaker. I don't think Undertaker's going to allow him to pull any of that stuff that he's done with Corbin or Finn Balor or The Miz or all these other people. I think it can be something pretty special, this. Well, I think it can be.
I've got two last questions about it before we move on. First of all, I mean, I think he is going to be on TV before WrestleMania. I'd be amazed if they left it, you know, because it's too big a match to just have a gong and I'll be there kind of thing. Like, it's just, yeah. This Monday's Raw's in Dallas, Texas. He lives in Texas. That, to me, would be the ideal time that he comes back. But my two questions to you are, in your gut, do you think that the character is going to change when he comes back, or do you think that they're just going to kind of ignore last year's thing and bring him back the way they had? What is your gut telling you?
I think they'll ignore what happened last year, or maybe do what I just suggested, where we'll just be seen picking the hat and gloves up. I don't think they'll bring him back as the American Badass. I'd like to see that, but I don't think that's going to happen because it's so long since he's played that character that a lot of fans today, you know, weren't fans when he was that character, which was 2003, that's right. He disappeared, didn't he? Then came back at WrestleMania 20 for the match with Kane. So, I mean, that's going back 15 years. So, I mean, a lot of fans weren't even born when he was playing that character. So I don't know whether they're going to go back to that. Because it's something as well that they don't mention it so much. It's sort of something, for a time, they were kind of denying it even happened on certain DVD releases. They sort of pretended that character never existed. So I think they're going to go with the character or version of the character that he played last year. That's what I think. What do you think, Kenny?
I think that the character has to change. And I only say that because if Cena had just come out and challenged Undertaker, I'd think the exact same way as you. But the fact that Cena's main gripe is you're not, you know, broken down. John Cena humanized the Undertaker.
And yeah, mentioned his wife and the Instagram.
Yeah, so I just think that, you know, so if they were going to bring him back just as the Undertaker, I don't think you would do any of that stuff because it wouldn't really serve to do it. Whereas bringing all that up kind of feels like they're kind of telling you, well, listen, he is going to come back, but he's not the same guy because he lost and he thought he was done. And so there kind of has to be a story of why he's back. So
maybe they can send Michelle McCool out on Raw next week.
Can you imagine? Maybe it'll be a mixed tag. Michelle McCool and The Undertaker against John Cena and Nikki Bella.
Oh, that's it. That's it. We've stumbled. You've stumbled across it, Kenny, once again. You're a genius.
Mixed tag mania. And my last question is, does it matter who wins?
I don't think it really does, no. I don't think it really does. I think Undertaker will win. But I don't really mind who wins. Because Cena will be departing again right after WrestleMania, as will The Undertaker. So I don't think the result really matters. And that's kind of the tragedy of the match and the tragedy really of ending the streak, which I've always found to be one of the dumbest things Vince has done in terms of, you know, actual match finish booking. I never got why he had Lesnar defeat Undertaker to end the streak. Lesnar was already over. He was already a star. He did not need that win. He absolutely did not need it. And if the streak was still going now, this match would take on a much greater significance.
See, I think the whole story of Lesnar in the streak, there is a brilliance to it, I think, in some ways, because it takes a lot of balls to just, you know, take this thing and artistically shoot it in the head to give you this agony and stuff than it does to just keep it going. But I think that the story should have been that Undertaker got beaten at WrestleMania 20-30, and we didn't see him again until he turned up during that Seth Rollins-Brock Lesnar match for the next year, because then it was like, well, you'd get why he was coming back. You know, he's coming back to get Lesnar. The Bray Wyatt thing is just such a turd in that story that it's like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why? No. He came back, he wasn't even on TV, he didn't even reference the fact that he lost his streak. Like, none of that was covered. It's just like, I mean, that's like the material you dream about getting to cover in a show. So
yeah.
I think Undertaker is probably going to win. But I think it's difficult if you go into a match saying that if only one person wins, that's the only way you can enjoy it. You're really limiting yourself.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't matter who wins because neither man becomes a bigger star by winning or becomes a lesser star by losing. You would think Undertaker's going to win because obviously he lost to Reigns last year. And if he can come back, have the match with Cena, and if the match is a success and he goes over, then you can do the rematch the next year.
Up next, guess kind of quickly, Ronda Rousey not on Raw. She'd been advertised for all the Raws leading up to WrestleMania, but she wasn't able to beat this one. There was some testing or something that she was doing in Pittsburgh, I think. Anyway, so she wasn't on the show, but she had been advertised. So we just got video packages about that match this week. Do you think it was... Did it make the story any better or worse, the fact that she wasn't there this week? What do you think?
I actually think it made the story better, because I said last week, I was like, what are they going to do to follow up that angle? I said that in last week's podcast. And as I said last week, I felt like there was too much content in that angle last week. But by not featuring her this week, I think that was the right decision, because I'm not quite sure what they're going to do when she next appears, which presumably will be this coming Monday, because she's apparently now on all episodes of Raw in the run-up to WrestleMania. So presumably Stephanie and Triple H will have some type of segment. I'm not sure what they're going to say, because it wasn't even addressed at all. They didn't appear on this week's episode, did they?
No, they weren't. They weren't on it this week.
They weren't on it. So Triple H and Stephanie weren't on this week's Raw, so they didn't address it. As I say, they just showed the highlights package from the previous week's angle. So I think it was a good thing that she wasn't there. I'm still not quite sure what they're going to do next, because they've already sort of... I guess there's got to be an angle where Triple H and Stephanie leave Angle and Ronda laying. But maybe that's on the Raw the week before WrestleMania.
That makes sense.
At some point.
And then just kind of to finish off the main show here, we're going to be talking about Fastlane and SmackDown on the Overrun, so patreon.com/insidetheropes for that. But elsewhere on Raw, we had Roman Reigns come out and basically involve Vince McMahon in the storyline, where he said that, you know, Lesnar's Vince's boy, and, you know, Vince didn't even say anything to him about it. So Reigns then goes back to Gorilla, to the Gorilla position, to confront Vince. Shane's standing there beside him. It's a great moment where Roman says to Shane, "I'm not talking to you." And then him and Vince go away. They have a closed door meeting. Renee Young's outside, and Vince has suspended Roman Reigns temporarily for what he did on the show, and says that Lesnar will definitely be at Raw this week, and he does have perks, but he's earned them. What did you think of the attempt to break the fourth wall, advertise and not deliver Lesnar again? It was an interesting way to present it. There's a lot of people enjoyed it, a lot of people didn't. What do you think?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I felt that they had to do something different. I mean, ultimately, it did not succeed. I mean, it's quite funny, really. Jonathan Coachman said on commentary, Roman Reigns is beloved as far as the sports entertainment community is concerned. Another coach classic. So then we had this big angle, which was all booked. Every part of it was all designed to leaders into feeling sorry for Reigns, lead us to cheer Roman Reigns, and lead us to detest that money-grabbing Brock Lesnar even more because he wasn't there. So this great injustice had apparently occurred where Reigns hadn't been informed by Vince McMahon that Brock wasn't there. It was Kurt Angle who broke the bad news to Roman Reigns. So it's like, so Reigns is there, like having to go to Vince, and then he's really upset and storms backstage into the Gorilla position. And then they disappear off into Vince's office. And then Reigns comes out just as they come back from commercial break. Amazing how that happened, wasn't it, Kenny?
Timing's impeccable.
Just after they come back from commercial break, Reigns comes out of Vince's office, disappears off. And then Vince said that Roman Reigns has been temporarily suspended. Two huge cheers. That just cracked me up, contrasting what Coachman had said about him moments, just a few minutes earlier. And then people cheered when he was temporarily suspended. I thought it was funny as well that they used the word temporarily. Well, yes, suspended usually does mean that, doesn't it? So, and no doubt he'll be, I don't know whether Reigns will be on Raw this week or they'll leave it until a week after. I'm not sure. I thought it was a good angle. I thought it was well done, but it did not cure the problem, which is that people don't like Roman Reigns because he's this symbol of the company. He's, everyone knows that he's Vince's guy. They're trying very hard to break that connection in the fans' eyes that Reigns is this super pushed entity, and that, they're trying to almost make him into this victim. and it isn't working. And I'm not quite sure what they can do to convert those jeers into cheers for Roman Reigns. I mean, you know, they've been trying this now for years, and it's not working. I enjoyed the angle. You know, it was an original angle. They hadn't done anything like that before that I can think of. And they're trying really hard to get the correct reaction or the reaction they want for Reigns and Lesnar at WrestleMania. But it doesn't seem to be working. So, we'll see what happens on Raw Monday. What did you think of it, Kenny? I like the angle in what they attempted to do, but the fact that it did not succeed sort of then makes you think, well, was it such a great angle? But is there anything they can do to get the desired reaction from Roman Reigns? There probably is, but it's going to be a long process, and they don't have that many weeks left until WrestleMania. So I think they're just going to have to accept the fact that on the night, regardless of the way Reigns has been presented and regardless of the way Lesnar has been presented, that fans are just going to boo Reigns and cheer Lesnar. I mean, that's what I'm expecting on the night.
I really like the angle. I thought it was good. You know, David didn't enjoy it, and he said that it was stupid because that people don't believe it. And, if you look at it didn't really make a lot of sense, but it was fun, you know, so I kind of enjoyed it for that. I think the main reason that it didn't work is, I think the story of actually, you know, Lesnar's Vince's boy and all that's quite good, but you're trying to, the people that this story is aimed at are the people who hate Roman Reigns.
Yes.
And the people who hate Roman Reigns that much or whatever, they read, you know, newsletters, listen to podcasts, whatever, they know that Vince McMahon's chosen boy is Roman Reigns.
Sure,
so it's almost like you're trying to insult the smarter fan base, it's like if CM Punk had come out to do stuff at Money in the Bank 2011 and wasn't speaking a modicum of factual truth, it wouldn't have worked. But because he was talking about things that fans really thought or really thought went on or blah, 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 then you were... You know, there's a niche fan base that you were targeting who could believe what you were saying. Whereas this is getting that niche fan base to believe something that they know to not be true. So it's kind of like throwing shit at a wall, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you're right. It's like it is geared towards a section of the audience who know that it's a scripted storyline and that is not real or phony. So it's like, it's almost as if you're saying to those people, no, everything that you think is real is not real. But then it's almost like saying, well, hang on a minute, we know that what we think is real, and you're insulting us by treating us like this and trying to make us cheer this guy that we don't like for all the reasons that we know are true. And you're trying to tell us that those reasons are a figment of our imagination. So it's a strange story. I mean, if they turn the guy heel, you know, if Reigns was a bad guy, and have we ever talked about the Reigns heel turn? We must have talked about it at some point. But if Reigns was a heel, can you imagine the heat he would be getting, Kenny? Can you imagine?
Is it too late now, though? I mean, there's been so many points where you could have, you know, if he'd have done it when he retired The Undertaker, if he'd have done it, you know, the year with Brock before, there's been a lot of times they could have done it. I don't know, would now it have as much of a punch?
I don't know whether it would, but I mean, if you had Vince out there championing Reigns, can you imagine the heat that would get if Vince was out there in full Mr. McMahon mode and Reigns, this is my man, this is my guy, you know, this is my champion. And then you were feeding Reigns all these babyface challengers. I mean, can you imagine the heat that would get? It would be absolutely massive. And they wouldn't have to, like, resort to coming up with these sort of convoluted angles to try and persuade the people who don't want to cheer Roman Reigns to cheer him. I mean, it's they're fighting a losing battle, basically. But you're right, maybe the time has passed for them to do the turn. And I can't see them doing it. They never did it with Cena. I mean, people back in 2005 were saying they need to turn Cena heel after they started booing him during the Chris Jericho and Christian program. That's when the booze really started. And then were amplified during the Kurt Angle storyline, which ran from about November through to January, November 2005 through to January 2006. Then Triple H came along and said, oh, all these guys, they don't know what they're doing. They can't work. The reason Cena's getting booed is because these people just do not know how to get the correct reaction for a babyface. And people jeered Cena even louder at WrestleMania 22 when Cena faced Triple H. So, they never did it with Cena in, or coming up to like nearly 13 years that people have been booing him. So chances are Vince isn't going to do it with Reigns either. So because he sees him as the flagship guy, and to be a flagship guy in Vince's mind, you've got to be a babyface.
Do you think that when Roman dethrones Brock Lesnar, do you think it matters at all if they close the show or not? Because to me, it feels like if they close the show with that, it's the third year in a row where WrestleMania goes off the air with that same image of, like him! Whereas it feels to me like if you do it, you know, third or fourth from the top, and it's not, you know, people know they've still got more stuff to come that they're excited about, maybe the reaction, I'm not saying he would get cheered hugely, but it feels to me like maybe the reaction would be a little bit different. Or do you think that matters at all, where they position it?
Well, if they don't put that match on last, we've talked about Undertaker Cena. I think it's a risk putting that on last, but you could put it on last. The only other real contender would be the mixed tag team match. And is that really the main event? Would people reject that as a main event? What do you think?
I mean, I think that one could be the main event. I think that's a bigger risk than Undertaker Cena, to be honest.
Because... Yeah, well, that is a risk putting that last as well. So it's tricky, isn't it? But you're right. If Reigns beats Lesnar, which we all believe is going to happen, and people boo him, you're right that once again we're ending the show in a way with the reaction that Vince doesn't want.
There's also these are like literally 1% of a chance, but there's always a chance they could decide to do Nakamura Styles at the end if they think, you know, well, we want people to, you know, go home happy or whatever. They could choose that. They could choose Asuka and Charlotte and you know, have it be an all-women's main event that's never happened before. I don't think they're likely, but I think if it's not the three that you mentioned, they're the only other two that I can even think would have, you know, a snowball's chance.
I can't see Styles and Nakamura going on last. I just cannot see that going on last. I don't think Vince is really a huge fan of Nakamura.
Do you think he'll let them get 20 minutes at WrestleMania?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I can see Nakamura winning the title, but I can't see him going on last. I don't think Vince really sees him as the guy.
Do you know, I'll tell you this. We're about to talk about SmackDown more on the overrun, but
yeah,
I think...
And you mentioned Asuka versus Charlotte. I see what you mean. That would be a bold move for WWE to put that on last, but also a risky move as well. I mean, would people really regard that as a main event and treat it as a main event? And it's tricky now, Kenny, because the show's so long. People are tired by the time the main event comes on. So it's got to feel big in order to get that reaction, or to have a chance of getting that reaction in the main event, because the show's so bloody long. So this is one of the drawbacks of running a show that's, I mean, what we'll be having at least a two-hour kickoff. It'll be at least a four-hour main show, and it could be longer than that. I mean, the kickoff could be longer than 2 hours.
Well, usually the main show tends to last 5 hours,
right,
or just
okay.
under it. And then the pre-show is 2 hours, but the first match usually starts about half an hour in. So you're talking 6.5 hours of stuff.
I mean, that's a long time for people to be out there. And a long time for people to, you know, to maintain their enthusiasm. So I think putting the Asuka versus Charlotte match in the main event, I don't think that's going to happen. And I wouldn't like to be either of those two if they were put in that position, because I think people might reject that as a main event. It's a tough one this year. It really is a tough one. But on the other hand, maybe it's not a tough one. Maybe it's good that they've got options and there's several matches that could go on last, which shows you that the show... You know, what they've announced so far for the card it's a stacked card. It's a loaded card. You know, there's a lot of big matches there, and for that we should, you know, that there in a sense it's almost like when you sport for choice, and that's not really a bad thing, is it, Kenny?
No, and I was saying, I mean, I think this year's WrestleMania could be one of their best, because there are about eight matches that could all be great.
I agree. Yeah, and I think it should be a really good event. It definitely should be.
So we're going to talk about a couple other things on Raw and Fastlane and SmackDown, and a little bit about the Okada Ospreay match from the New Japan's anniversary show over on the Overrun, which you can get over at patreon.com/insidetheropes at the $4 level. Finn, if people want to read that Honky Tonk Man interview that you did with him in the Power Slam Interviews 2 book, where he gives the reasons as to why he's turned it down, where can people go to get that?
Well, they can get it from Amazon, iBooks or Kobo, but you can go to my Power Slam Interviews Volume 2. It's available in ebook format from all of those different sites. If they want to know more about the book or more about me, they can go to my website, which is finleymartin.co.uk. Follow me on Twitter at finleymartin or at Powerslam Online. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985. You can find the brand at Inside_the Ropes. And remember, there are limited VIP tickets left, and there's general admission tickets left for Paul Heyman in New Orleans. There is no subject off limits. We're going to talk about anything and everything. We are going to talk about Brock Lesnar. Is he leaving? Is he staying? Does Paul Heyman want to manage Ronda Rousey? You know, what really happened in the feud with Goldberg? All that kind of stuff we're going to cover. It should be one of our best shows we've ever done. So you can get all your tickets for that at paulheymanlive.com, because we realised that when Paul does some press for it locally in New Orleans, having insidetheropes.co.uk is mental. So paulheymanlive.com is where to go to get all that information. So thanks very much for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week to talk about the fallout from Raw and SmackDown, maybe get a little bit of an update on Impact, and also we're going to be talking about Bob Backlund and his title reign from 78 to 83. So thanks for listening, everybody. Bye. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.